Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome to Red Storm Chasers. I'm Vincent, here with Craig, Tim, and Nick. On this episode, we'll look back at the end of the first season of Rick Pitino here at St. John's University. Guys, good to be back on the pod with you. Unfortunately, it's the last episode of the season.
Yeah, I really thought we'd be previewing an NCAA tournament game on this one, but unfortunately we are not. So that sucks.
It certainly does. Certainly does. Nick, Tim, good to have you guys back. I mean, you were here last week, Nick, but Tim, you missed last week. I think you missed the last 2 weeks, so great to have you back. How you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Just solid. Prepping for the little guy to come around, and hopefully I'll be real soon.
And solid. Solid, yeah, times.
Just focusing on him and my wife and my daughter.
Very good.
Because things happen with St. John's basketball.
That's the way it goes. Nick, how you doing?
I'm good. I kind of wanted to jump off the bridge last week, but, you know.
Oh, it was certainly a rough one. And listen, it's not the ending of the season we all wanted, right? It's not the end of the season that certainly I think, and I think we all thought that we deserved.
For sure.
But it's the ending we got, right? Because that's the way St. John's basketball goes. We finished the season 20-13 on the year, 11-9 in the Big East, which I have to say, had there not been that middle period of the season where we had such a rough stretch and Rick Pitino comes out and calls out the players, although I do think that actually got them to play as well as they played at the end of the year, I think the narrative of our season changes, and I think we end up in the tournament because the only reason I personally think we – well, I think there's multiple reasons I think we didn't, but I think that the narrative of us changed to being a rocky team, and the minute that happened, it was easy for them to take us out. So the second highest net ranking team ever to not make the tournament, just to give you some accolades as to why we probably should have. The other one, by the way, also happened this year. Indiana State was higher ranked than us, and they are the highest, and we are the first two teams ever ranked in the top 32 net at the end of the year to not make the NCAA tournament. Not to mention a million other reasons, like St. John's had 11 wins in the Big East, which is first one. I shouldn't say first because Seton Hall did it as well, but first two teams to have double-digit wins in conference in the Big East since
Providence.
Realignment and Providence. I forgot about them and not make the tournament. Just you could go down the list of reasons that we, you know, that these teams should have made the tournament, but we didn't. Right, end of the day, the NCAA tournament committee sucks, and they didn't include us. So
the problem is also that they, not only did they not include us, they kept moving the goalposts for the Big East team. Seemingly, there definitely was a Big East bias here.
Anti Big East bias.
Super Big East bias. I mean, if you look at their reasoning or whatever you want to call it,
the explanation they gave, it can't possibly be true. But
the things that they touted for some of the other schools why they got in terms, i.e., Michigan State, Virginia, the things they said, first of all, like they talked about high end wins with Virginia. Okay, they beat, you know, they beat Duke and North Carolina. Talk about Seton Hall, who beat UConn and Marquette. And by the way, they had a better, you know,
higher net than Virginia. Higher.
Well, the higher net than Virginia today?
They did. I think, I'm pretty sure both Seton Hall and St. John's had higher net than Virginia. Yeah, only Providence did.
Virginia was in the 70s.
Their net was terrible.
Virginia was high.
And we had the better net, and we had a better strength of record. But the thing is, for the Big East teams, they moved the needle, right? So for St. John's, though, they didn't have enough quality wins. For Seton Hall, though, it wasn't about that. It was about the net was too low. They even factored in that Klingon got hurt in the middle of the game that they were already winning against UConn, so they discounted the UConn win, which is patently absurd.
And then they didn't care about when Kadari Richard was injured.
Correct. Seton Hall's net was higher than Virginia, Craig. You were correct. It was not higher.
And then they also tried to say, like, oh yeah, well, you know, the Big East as a whole had hurt there because their non-conference schedule wasn't strong enough. When the Big 12's non-conference was
that argument is one that really sticks with me. They said that the Big East teams were dragged down because Georgetown and DePaul weren't good. I call bullshit, by the way, because first of all, take a team like
West Virginia,
Louisville,
sure. Well,
yeah, there's Louisville.
Ooh. And half Notre of the Dame. Big 10 teams, like literally half of the Big 10 teams, are If Georgetown was in the Big Ten, they would have had more wins. If Georgetown was in the ACC, they would have been a mediocre team. They would have finished in the top half of the league in the ACC.
The one problem is DePaul was historically
bad. Listen, they were historically – sure, except look at the number of quad four teams that Oklahoma scheduled, that majority of the Big 12 teams scheduled at a conference. That's why their nets were so high. They're artificially inflated because they got wins against crappy teams, and the committee just didn't look at them. They just didn't care. What the committee really did was this. The NCAA committee was terrified, as the NCAA is, that the Power Five football conferences are going to leave. So what they did was they figured out how they could give as many bids as possible to those five conferences and make any excuse possible to exclude other people. It's why you see Boise State and Colorado State, two teams shouldn't be in the last four. Now, Boise State lost, unfortunately. They played a bad game. Doesn't take away the fact that they shouldn't have been in that game. They shouldn't have been in the last four in. Colorado State, by the way, embarrassed Virginia. Virginia had 14 points at halftime. That's absurd.
Wasn't remotely a tournament team. They were the third best team in the ACC. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The other problem for us is the bid stealers were problematic. Although the thing that made me like absolutely bonkers or out of control on Sunday was the fact that we weren't in the first four out. If you wanted to tell me that because of the bid stealers, St. John's was on the fringe and we didn't make it, I could live with that to a certain degree. I knew we were kind of a coin flip based on how many there were a lot of bid stealers.
There were certainly a lot of bids stolen the last five
bids stolen in the last weekend, which is an extraordinarily high amount.
No, there wasn't. There was four bids stolen. The committee said there was five because they weren't putting New Mexico in, which is
didn't have New Mexico in. Yeah, but New Mexico was fringe. New Mexico was right on the edge.
Not once they made the championship.
Every bracketologist had them as last four in, first four out.
Craig.
They did.
The bracketologists know nothing. Look at this bracket. Look at the bracketologists. They know nothing. They are filling out with as much of a crapshoot as anybody else. Joe Lunardi, hailed as being Joe Lunardi. They're great. Finished 126 of
167.
Of like 250 experts.
Yeah,
he's just another Mel Kiper. Just a big name, no results.
He's even worse. Well, he's as bad as Mel Kiper because he changed his results after the fact for multiple years. Sorry, Craig, what were you going to say?
Well, regardless of the bracketologist, whatever the case may be, the bid stealers were a problem. But for us, if we were in the last four in and you say, look, man, we got a bad break, a lot of bid stealers, we were close to the line, but we didn't make it, I would be upset we didn't make it, but I would be like, yeah, you know, that happens, right? The fact of the matter is that even if all those things went right, if none of those bids got stolen, we still wouldn't have been in. And that makes me crazy because they just weren't paying attention. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
What they did was they packed up on Wednesday of championship week. The Wednesday of championship week, they packed up, went home, and said, hey, listen, whatever happens the rest of the way, it doesn't matter. We've already got it slotted. Tim?
I mean, I'm pretty sure the only reason UVA made it was because the people on the committee board really confused the fact that there's two different Tony Bennett's. They put him in because they thought the head coach died.
I think the only reason
him and Lady Gaga.
The only reason they put it in Virginia was because they're in the ACC. The ACC doesn't deserve five bids. It's absurd. They're a terrible conference. Not. Terrible conference.
The always crappy conference.
They deserve three at most.
And Michigan State got in because their name is Michigan State.
Michigan State got in because of Tom Izzo. Because
of Tom Izzo. Nothing. That's it.
FAU is a 9 seed? In what world? FAU had two quad one wins.
8 seed.
Sorry, you're right. FAU had two quad one wins. They also had two quad four losses. That's absurd. You lost to teams ranked near DePaul.
Yeah.
And you get to be an 8 seed? No shot. You didn't even win your conference.
Yeah. Didn't even go to the finals.
You're right.
South Florida and them both lost in the semis. That's why they
right. South Florida was the one
already feeling. Before right. something even happened.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. Well,
so
I actually do have my favorite quote from it's the Blue Demon Degenerate on Twitter.
Okay. Shout out to Paul.
Explains what happened.
Our sister's school.
where were Nick?
Of course you have to throw that in, Nick. His quote was, "When the committee, what the committee did is actually commendable and honorable. When you consider all the crack they smoked before going into a conference room and making all those decisions."
It's probably not true. That probably not untrue.
That is to a T what must have happened, because what kind of bender did you go on that you put this together and said, all these make sense?
It's the only way that being not knowing what you're doing is the only way that any of that makes sense.
I think you have to put out, they should have to put out a criteria ahead of time. These are the things we're evaluating. Like,
it's like the refs not doing press conferences. We need,
there you go,
accountability.
We need accountability.
Not like that.
The
tournament committee should have to have a press conference. I'm for everybody giving press conferences. Sit down and ask questions. When
they come out, they all look like Tyrone Biggums.
I love to ask the head of the committee, the guy who had to sit through, and thank God he had to sit through that Virginia game against Colorado State. I hope he was required to stay there the entire time and didn't get to leave early, because, and you know, I have to be honest, I kind of enjoyed how terrible that game was.
Yeah, no,
a little bit. I was like, you know what? Good. This is what the committee gets. This is what you deserve. This terrible version of basketball is what you picked, so that's what you get. You know what I mean? That's at the end of the day, that's it. But
did you see Pitino tweeted that he thinks that former coaches should be the ones who pick the tournament?
That's a good move. I would be in favor of the committee.
Better. Like retired coaches, not you know, kind of like
right.
He said like Jim Boeheim and Coach K and
not Jim Boeheim, but yeah.
Well, I'm just telling what Pitino said. I'm not telling you. This is my decision.
I think yes and no. Although Jim Boeheim, as much as I hate him, he did stick up for the Big East this past week and said that the Big East deserved more bids than that Seton Hall and St. John's deserved to be in.
I mean, they got Big East phobia. Let's be serious. Only three teams from the Big East. But you got six from the Mountain
West. Absurd.
Six.
Don't hate on the Mountain West, though. Mountain West is a very good conference.
No. But if you're going to put six Mountain West teams in and you look at their breakdowns, there should at least be five Big East teams.
Yeah, I think you're picking on the wrong tree there. But I get your point in that the Big East deserves to have more bids for sure.
They got the Mountain West got messed up with their rankings of their teams in it, but saying that six Mountain West teams made it, there should have been still those six in, but five Big East teams as well.
I think we all agree more Big East teams deserve to make this field. Absolutely. I think that's been the mantra all around. Now, listen, it's an unfortunate way for the season to end, and I do think Rick Pitino's comments were very kind. I thought they were also kind of funny about how we should never talk about the net again because it's fraudulent, which is correct. True. He's 100% right on that. He did say the committee has a hard job and that, you know, they do a good job, which is bullshit. The statement I think that rubbed me the worst was the statement from the Big East. I don't know if you guys caught it. I liked Val Ackerman, but the statement is just too soft. It just doesn't. We got screwed, right? The conference got screwed, and it got screwed pretty bad. It's not enough. So there's three paragraphs. The first paragraph is about, you know, we're very excited for UConn, Marquette, and Creighton. Great. Then they talk about the extension at Madison Square Garden, by the way. Big news. Big East tournament locked in at Madison Square Garden until 2032. So that's great. But anyway, here's the part of the statement where I think we went wrong, or she went wrong as a conference. "We have great respect for the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee and the time and effort that goes into selecting and seeding the teams for the NCAA tournament. Do we, though? It's a very challenging job, and we have been advised that this year's upsets added to the complexity and contributed to the committee's final bracket selection. Given the high level of play in our league, we are understandably very disappointed that some worthy Big East teams were not selected to participate. We will be working closely with our schools in the coming months to best position the Big East next year and to ensure that we continue to be respected in March Madness in a manner befitting our statute as one of the best conferences in college basketball." Not hard enough.
Yeah, that's
not hard enough.
That's very, very
weird. There needs to be a, you guys fucked up, right? and we're pissed off about it. And that just didn't happen.
There needs to be some kind of bite, some kind of bark, some kind of, we need to be respected and we're not being respected, because that statement's kind of just like, yeah, well, I guess we're going to have to be
better. I mean, that's essentially what she said, was, oh, well, you know, tough luck, guys. We should do better next year. We're going to figure out how to do better next year.
Tough luck. You're going to work with your schools to make sure we're in a better place. How could you possibly make sure we're in a better place?
Unless they're planning on screwing them with the net like the Big 12 did as a conference.
But sure, I don't really know how you do that as a conference, but yeah. I mean, unless you're going to go out and add teams, which we know Val Ackerman's not going to do. So like, I don't get it. I don't. First of all, the statement's weak, and it just doesn't do anything for me. Right. And I just you needed to come out a little bit stronger here. Because
a lot stronger.
You're right, yeah. A lot stronger. And the thing is, you have a large portion of the population who would accept a hard statement from the Big East right now. Not even just Big East fans.
Everybody.
Even non-Big East fans would say, yeah, you know what? People. They have every right to be pissed. Even if it's not just St. John's. Seton Hall got screwed, right? Providence, whoever fans out there who are non-Big East fans are saying, they still think Big East got screwed. This is a moment we could have captured and say, yeah, we got hosed and we didn't take advantage of it. And shame on the conference. Anyway, first season of Rick Pitino in the books here at St. John's University. It had super excitement. It had super fun. It had super downturns. It was interesting. It had people getting called out for being slow laterally. It had, you know, everything in between.
Unenjoyable experience of Rick Pitino's career.
I saw a lot of people using that for the Virginia game last night as a meme, which I thought was spectacular. Anyway, I wanted to get your takeaway from this first season of Rick Pitino. Tim, I'll let you go first.
This first year of Rick really showed great coaching and what it can do throughout a season. We went through the season, we thought we were collapsing, and what a great coach can do to a team that he believes in, bring him back. And I think the season ends with an asterisk, because I personally believe we were a tournament team. And as I'm a little disappointed that we didn't accept the NIT bid, because I would want to see the seniors play out their final couple games. He thought we were worthy of an NCAA bid. I'm sure he talked to the players and was perfectly okay with turning down the NIT bid.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the NIT bid in a minute, but it is a little disappointing to hear that we didn't take that. But, you know, at the end of the day, there were decisions made, which we'll discuss. Nick, what's your takeaway from the season?
I guess my biggest takeaway of the season was that the eyes were on us all season. From the non-conference to the beginning of the Big East to the end of the Big East, all the way to Selection Sunday and today, after the Virginia game. Everybody's been talking about us all season long, whether it was us playing well, us playing bad, Rick Pitino's calling us out, or we got screwed. We've been in the media constantly in ways that, maybe not in ways, but with consistency that I haven't seen maybe in my lifetime. I mean, maybe when I was younger, but I don't really remember those times. Fair.
I mean, that's a great point. We certainly were more in the media than we had been in many years, and in both good and bad ways. But to be honest, mainly in good ways, mainly in hype ways, right? SportsCenter coming live from Carnesecca Arena during practices, right? Just the air of doing the press conference with Rick Pitino at Madison Square Garden, kicking things off. Obviously, that's long ago, but that kind of started the media frenzy, if you will, that continued to follow. I mean, right. Multiple times you opened ESPN on a random week, and there would be a note in the top, you know, top stories about St. John's, which hadn't happened in the past, and is a Rick Pitino factor for sure. Craig, what was your main takeaway?
I think my main takeaway was like a foundational year. And I think there were a lot of things that we were looking forward to. Friday night of the Big East was something that we've been waiting for a long time. It was. And playing games like that really matter. But it didn't turn out the way we wanted. I think just being back in games that matter and being important in reality and getting a chance and laying that foundation for years to come. I hope we got farther. I think we were an NCAA tournament team, as we've said So I'm was sad to see it end as it did, because we didn't know it was over. We assumed there was more time. Right. I thought there was maybe at least another game, and there wasn't. But I think, you know, I think to Nick's point, being in the media more and that kind of stuff was cool. You know, St. John's being back and important again. So I think that was good. That's my main takeaway.
Yeah, I think my main takeaway was just similar to Tim, but really how we haven't had great coaching in a long time, and how all of a sudden we had great coaching. And even though people thought at a moment where, oh no, the game has passed, Rick, you know, he lost his mind calling out players like that. It's going to have a negative effect. The turnaround at the end of the season, winning six games straight, getting to the Friday of the Big East tournament, playing a game against UConn, which was an A game, by the way. If we don't play UConn in that, if we don't play UConn in that game on Friday, and UConn doesn't play their A game, we win that game. If UConn plays how they 100%. Played in the finals against us on Friday, we win that game. That's how well we played. I mean, we lost, and it was disappointing, but we played phenomenally on Friday night. We played phenomenally on Thursday night, first of all, to get to Friday night. The game against Seton Hall was an A game as well, 91-72. We dominated that game, right? And we played every aspect of the game well. And we went out, we did it again on Friday night. Now, listen, sometimes you do that and you run into a team whose A game is better than yours. And that's what happened, right? UConn's A game was better than ours. UConn, they shot lights out. Right. And listen, sometimes it's going to happen. They shot 57% from the field and 50% from three.
That's crazy.
It's hard. It's near impossible to beat.
It's 100% right? That Wisconsin Arizona game.
Yeah. And listen, we were only five. We were lost by 5 points. And by the way, one or two bounces, we win this game. Jarrell Soriano makes those two free throws, and it's a different game at the end because it's a 3-point game instead of a 5-point game. Right. So as disappointing as the end of the season was, we saw what great coaching is like for the first time in a long time. And I think there is nothing but positive outlooks for where this is going to go. Right? We should have been a tournament team this year, and this was year one. And everything in the history of Rick Pitino says year two is the year where Rick Pitino really takes on. Right? So next year should be even better, which I think is exciting to be able to say things like that. And not end the year just drinking the Kool-Aid, or start the year just drinking the Kool-Aid, and this is going to, you know, things are going to turn around finally.
And hoping things are different.
And hoping, right? And really just hoping they're going to be different, whereas now they actually are different. But getting to Friday night of the Big East tournament, I know we kind of passed over it in the talk of the end of the season. That Thursday night win feel, that Thursday feeling after the win was incredible.
Incredible.
I mean,
I'll remember that feeling for a very long time, which is kind of sad to say that I'll remember the feeling of St. John's getting defeated.
24 years. 24 years we hadn't been there.
It was special.
Basically my whole life. Basically my entire memory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not even, you know, we didn't even sweat it out, right? We were dominant in that game against Seton Hall. There was no doubt we were going to win that game.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's so frustrating that we didn't get farther, because
only St. John's fans, by the way, were concerned in that Seton Hall game. We were up with 5 minutes to go, and I'm sweating it out. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. This is not going to happen. It's going to go wrong is all I was saying for the last 3 minutes of the game. Then it's like a minute and a half to go, and we're up by 20. And I'm like, I think we might be okay. You know, But all along, you can't believe it. 24 years. Sorry, Craig,
I'm pretty sure I heard the whistle blow, and I'm pretty sure it says final. But there's a chance we might blow this still.
It was so exciting, and Thursday was such a good feeling, and hopefully next year we're talking about how Friday winning on Friday was such a good feeling. I just think back, and I just wish we were the sixth seed and could have played DePaul and then a banged up Marquette team. Because we would have beat both of those teams, and then we would have beat UConn's shitty performance in the finals. But absolutely. I digress.
Yeah. A sixth seed, like we talked about there. That's, if we get the sixth seed there, different tournament.
They would have been barbecue chicken.
Yeah, they good turnaround, Tim. I'd like to have him spell barbecue chicken. Anyway, now let's get back to the end of the season decisions by St. John's University. We were offered an NIT bid, and we turned it down. Interesting decision.
You like four letters, not three.
Well, certainly you always like four letters and not three. What is your take, I guess, on St. John's and Rick Pitino turning down the NIT bid?
Personally, I think for us, I would have preferred us to have more games because, like I said, we kind of – it felt like Friday we weren't ready. We thought there was going to be another game. Everyone assumed there was going to be another game. So, you know, I feel like the seniors didn't get the, like, proper send-off that they deserved. But I'm sure this wasn't – I'm sure this was a team decision. I'm sure Rick talked to the team with a lot of seniors. And I understand it in terms of, you know, guys getting prepping for the draft and the transfer portal opening and all that kind of stuff. So there's other factors in it. Plus, you know, as the NIT gets more and more watered down, it's almost to what end?
That's fair. I think taking away the regular season champion bids was a real screw job by the NCAA. Yeah. I think that hurts the NIT in the long run because it takes away any bit of Cinderella type stories that can happen in the NIT. And you just end up with a bunch of mediocre. Not mediocre, not all mediocre, but the lower seeds in the NIT end up being just mediocre teams from larger conferences who didn't deserve to be in the NCAA tournament, but also don't really deserve to be in the NIT.
I mean, you had a lot of teams turn it down this year. We were not the only ones. Pitt turned it down.
Yeah.
Oklahoma turned it down. A whole bunch of other schools turned it down.
They're all getting on the recruit.
Yeah, so that's
which is another problem.
I think that, you know, that's another real point we've got to talk about here. The NCAA, not only the NCAA tournament committee screw us or screw up and be terrible. The NCAA here is just abysmal.
I mean, that's par for the course for the
NCAA. Well, for sure, but the transfer portal is open. It opened on Monday after the selection Sunday. That makes zero sense. Zero sense. You have teams competing in the tournament who also now have to have people go out and recruit people who have entered. Pretty big names have entered the portal already. Now, if you're still playing, your players, you hope, are not going to enter the portal.
Right, but right. Theoretically, they could, though.
Which is absurd. You could have players in the NCAA tournament in the transfer portal as well, which is nuts.
They would probably be released from the team. They probably lose their scholarship as soon as you enter the portal.
You wouldn't be able to be eligible at that point.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to travel.
Okay, but regardless, you could have. Here's a scenario: you're on a team and you're a bench guy, and you decide I gotta get out there in front of this. You leave. Now the team is screwed. They might kick you off the team. Okay, fine, but
they're one guy short.
They're one guy short.
So the adverse of that is who's going to pick that guy up, because they know if push comes to shove, he's gonna worry about himself. If you guys make it to the tournament and he doesn't get his minutes, he's going to do that to you again.
Valid.
That drops his stock.
I don't disagree. I think that people make decisions that are stupid all the time. And if it affects the tournament, that's bad for the sport. And your point is well taken, Nick. I think it would be it's a terrible look for the player. It's a terrible look. And it will affect their recruiting, but it's more important that the integrity of the sport needs to be protected, and that's why you can't have the transfer portal open.
The NCAA can solve this problem.
It's an easy
solution. It opens on the Tuesday after the national championship. Bang! Right. Problem solved.
It's not even hard.
We avoid the entire issue, and it just doesn't exist. It's so stupid.
You know what the problem is?
If this is just a leftover, right? If this is a before the transfer portal became a big thing, it always used to open up and no one really paid attention to it, and the NCAA overlooked that, all right, maybe they get a pass. Maybe. They now know how important the transfer portal is and should have corrected it. But mostly that's not what happened, because it used to always be at the end of the season anyway. So they probably changed it to move it up to this point, which is even worse, because someone went through a process of figuring out that, you know what, the transfer portal should open the day after Selection Sunday, which is moronic.
The problem is, and I think this is my take on this, is that the reason we have this is because for years, the NCAA, instead of figuring out how to make NIL and free movement of players through the transfer portal, instead of figuring out ways to do this correctly and like with rules and safeguards and guidelines and all that, they just said, no, you can't do any of this. So their stance was no. We're not going to figure it out. We're not going to work on it. The answer is no. And then what happened is people said, no, that's not okay. You can't do that. And then what happened is now they're too afraid to do anything because they're afraid they're going to get sued, which they are. And because now the courts are interjecting because they didn't take the time to do the right thing in the first place. And that's the problem. Because they didn't do the right thing in the first place, now it's the Wild West. And now they can't put it back in the box because now anything they seem to do is limiting player movements like that. Except that certain things do matter. And protecting the integrity of the postseason of the sport should be paramount to the people that job is to protect the sport.
But you would think, but they also want to expand the field now. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much integrity of the NCAA tournament, which is the best sporting event in sports, they care about it, which is stupid. They've got a golden goose, right? Just don't kill the golden goose. All you have to do, literally all you have to do, is just let it be. You can screw up everything else in college sports. Just leave the NCAA tournament alone. It's the one thing everybody can agree on is perfect. Just let it be. It's all they have to do is let it be, and they can't. They can't fucking do it. They're too dumb. Watch, they're going to expand the field. They're going to expand it to 72, and then from there they're going to try to expand it more, and it's going to dilute it to a point where it's no longer what it is. What it is what makes it so great. And it's sad to watch because you don't know how much longer it's going to last in its current format, which is absolutely spectacular.
I think if you add a few other play-in games, it's not the end of the world as long as you keep the schedule as currently constituted and you don't take away any automatic bids.
That'd sure. be my take. Sure, I mean, that's fine.
Doubling the play-ins, you can work it. I don't think it's necessary. I think the buildup of the conference tournaments going into March Madness is the perfect buildup. You get the high point of Selection Sunday, and then a day, a two, and all of a sudden, boom, play in, full charge right into March Madness. It's a perfect buildup. My gut says something's going to get screwed up. They're too money hungry. Something's going to happen.
The problem is...
Oh, yeah. They're definitely going to add.
They're going to add teams. And listen, Craig, maybe you're not wrong, except here's what they'll do. They'll say, oh, yeah, we're going to add play-in games, right? But what they'll do is they'll take automatic bids of the lower conferences, and they'll make them play-in games. So all of the 16s will be play-in. Probably all of the 15s will be play-in. And what that will do is that will... Oh, no, we didn't expand the field that much. But what you now have done is you have expanded the field significantly because you're adding in more power conference teams who are now currently at the bubble. Those teams are getting in. Yeah, sure, they're going to be lower seeds. They're going to be 13s now instead of being 12s and 13s possibly. But that's what they're going to do to let more higher conference teams in. So the teams who are going to get screwed are the Cinderellas because that's what they always do.
Yeah,
which ruined the fun.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I think
they'll hang their hat on. Oh well, these 16 and 15. Now they get to win a game in the tournament. Except, with all due respect, how many people really count the playing the first four as being a tournament win?
I mean, they get the same money.
Sure,
they get a unit that matters a lot to a small conference, but.
Yeah, that yes,
it does. Monetarily, it does significantly.
For sure, but it does. Except not as much if you're a 14 who could win two games, is it not?
Agreed. I'm not saying you should do that. If they are to do that, it should only be bubble schools from power conference teams like us, frankly, that should have to do the extra playing game.
But that's never going to happen.
I'm not saying it will.
You know it's not. I
don't disagree, but I'm just saying. There's a way to do it without screwing this up. Not saying that they will do it, but there is a way to do this without screwing up, is my point.
I think there might be. Yes.
No, I agree with you, but as you said before, Craig, the NCAA already fell back way, years ago on the fact that we're not going to do anything because this is the way it is, and now they're not trying to correct anything because they're scared.
They're literally just trying to cling to life is what they're trying to do. So their idea is if we just throw the power conferences anything they want – they won't hurt us, right? They're just going to hide under their desk and hope the bomb doesn't hit. You know, that's it. Everybody out there, anyone who's talking about, yeah, maybe it is a good idea to expand. No. Just leave it alone. Some things are better just left alone. All right. So, obviously, throughout the year, we had our spotlight players of the week. Craig, did you finally get us a total? Do we finally know who got the most spotlight players of the week, or am I still going to have to go and just make up numbers?
The most I do. The most spotlight players of the week was Danis Jenkins, followed closely behind Joel Soriano, who racked up a bunch early on in the season.
Fair. All right, Nick, bigger surprise. The selection committee not putting us in the tournament, or Craig actually getting the numbers of who got the most spotlight players of the week?
Craig didn't actually say the numbers. He just said who won.
All right. Jenkins got five, Soriano got three.
There you go.
He did get the numbers.
Come at me.
I got to be honest. I wasn't sure Craig was prepared with the numbers, but now I know.
Didn't somebody else have three also?
No. Dingle had one. Dunlap had one. Rick Pitino's press conference had one.
That was a good one. Let me tell you, that press conference earned that one.
It definitely earned that one.
Well, those guys got spotlight players of the week. Now we're going to do a spotlight player of the year. It doesn't have to be based on the number who received it, although I think that it gives some context at least. Now that we know the numbers, thank you, Craig, for finally taking the 3 weeks we asked for it and figuring it out. But we're going to go around. Let's take a vote. So, Nick, we'll start with you. Your spotlight player of the year for St. John's 2023-24 season.
I think the answer has to be Danis Jenkins. He averaged 15 points a game, almost 5.5 assists a game, and he was a catalyst for our team. I mean, he really, in big moments, he was the guy. He was the star of the show. He played really exceptionally well down the stretch when we made our final push towards the NCAA tournament. And almost willed us there. And throughout the year, he was the rock that ran the offense, ran things. And I think we wouldn't have had as good a season than we had without Danis Jenkins. So I'm going to go with Danis Jenkins.
All right. Tim, who are you going for?
I'm going with Rick Pitino.
Oh.
Now, I know only his press conference won a actual player of the week, but I believe Rick Pitino and his coaching style, his coaching excellence, his coaching history, being a Hall of Famer, pulled this team together, a team that was put together last second and almost brought us to a tournament on his first season. So I go with Coach Pitino.
All right. Nick, who are you voting for?
So I'm actually going to go with a little blast from the past, Joel Soriano.
Still on the team. I don't know if it's a blast from the past.
No. Well, I mean, we haven't talked about him in a long time. He hasn't gotten a spotlight player for a long time. But, and that's kind of part of the reason why I am voting for him is because although down the stretch he, you know, wasn't the Joel Soriano of old, for the first like third, maybe to two-fifths of the season, he was the reason why we won games. And without him being he was our focal point at a time when the team was just learning how to be a team together. Without him, you know, stepping up, I mean, not even stepping up because he was who he was last season, but without him continuing who he was the season prior, I don't know if we're even having the conversation if we're in it or not on Selection Sunday because we don't have the amount of wins we need.
That's fair. I think that's a good note. I think Joel Soriano did have a good year.
One more. 13.8 points, 9.5 rebounds on 57 field goal percentage, and he even shot 43% from the three.
Well, very few threes taken.
The very few threes, but hey, enough to have a good stat.
I guess so. I like that vote. I like Tim's, but I don't like them as much as I like Craig's. And I'm voting for Danis Jenkins because Danis Jenkins was the best player on our team. He was the best player on our team all year. Danis Jenkins had two games in Big East play where he didn't score double digits. And in those two games, he scored 9 points and he scored 8 points. And in the game where he scored 8 points, he had 9 assists. In the entire season, Danis Jenkins had 5 games where he didn't score double digits. One of them, he was against Holy Cross, where he played 16 minutes and he scored 2. That was his worst game. It was a bad one. But that was in November. From December 20th until January 24th, he didn't have a single game where he scored in single digits, which just shows you that's the kind great. Of year that Danish Jenkins had. And from January 24th, it would be another month. It would be February 28th the next time he had single digits. That's how great of a season Danish Jenkins had. He was exactly what we wanted, or what I guess we expected Joel Soriano to be, quite frankly. The leading guy on our team is who Danish Jenkins was, and he deserves all the recognition as Spotlight Player of the Year, which he gets because he got two votes. And Rick Pitino and Joel Soriano get an honorable mention because they got votes, and it's the Spotlight Player of the Year. So it's not like the week where we just throw the other votes away. Here you get an honorable mention. But Danish Jenkins, you are the Spotlight Player of the Year here. All right, well, that puts a bow on the previous season. And as we mentioned earlier, the transfer portal is open. So already looking ahead to next season, part of the reason we didn't go to the NIT, as Rick Pitino said, was to get a focus on recruiting and bring in a bunch of new players, which he's going to have to do. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at things, that's the college basketball world we live in now. Every year, you're going to have to bring in a bunch of new players.
And we have a lot of seniors.
And we happen to be this year built of a team of seniors who, you know, obviously need to be replaced. The good news is so far we haven't had a lot of entries into the portal. We've only had one. It's Cruz Davis, who spent a lot of the year injured. So we didn't really get to see much of him play. Now we've heard, through the grapevines that, you know, Wiltshire's committed to coming back. Dunlap's committed to coming back. And Zuby Ejiofor is locked in coming back. The two who I guess are kind of up in the air are RJ Lewis and Glenn Taylor. Both of them are, you know, haven't made a decision as far as I've heard. They have no plans to, but didn't lock back in or guarantee that they're not going to. As we said, there's been some people who have some bigger names who have. In particular, Cliff Omoyuri is a name that you're going to hear a lot. He's a center. From Rutgers, 6'11", big guy. He would be a guy who would fill the spot of Joel Soriano and you know, play down there with Zuby, who's locked in to come back. So it's going to come faster than we think the next season, right? It's going to be we're going to start we're waiting until other schools finish and their players enter the portal to start hearing that movement's being made. So Rick has also said he's going to bring in a lot of guys. What do you guys think, what do you expect to see, I guess, over this next kind of transfer portal period?
I think the new wave of this is there's like five guys you need to keep in as your core, right? We talked about the three. Really, it would be good for us to keep Glenn Taylor and RJ Lewis because it just builds the core. They know the system. You're not starting from scratch again. You have guys that have a baseline of what we're doing here. Then you bring in the freshman, both freshmen that's coming in, Jaden Glover, Maker, and Lefty Lefteropoulos from Greece. And then you added a few impact transfers, like big time transfer. Cliff would be a guy who's an impact transfer. You don't need, you know, we now have our base of a roster. It's not like the first year. So I think that's kind of what I'm looking for, the big impact transfers this year to get us onto the next step of the Rick Pitino journey here.
Right. I guess my question, Nick, is it better to go out and get bigger guys now, or is it better to wait a little bit and see, you know, listen, obviously the tournament teams are still playing. Those teams are going to have players who transfer. Are you better off waiting a bit and seeing, you know what, why don't I wait to get some better talent who was on a tournament team and now has some extra experience that I can add to mine?
I think as a coach, you kind of got to flirt with a little bit of both, right? You kind of got to talk with the best guys now and you say, hey, we're interested in you, and you start starting the process now, and you kind of almost bide your time until the tournament ends and then the bigger guy comes out and then you really pursue all of them. Now, I also don't think we should go after every big name in the portal. I think that's what we've always tried to do in years past, and I think getting the best talent is it works sometimes in some scenarios, but I think getting the best talent isn't always the best option for everybody. I think Rick Pitino is somebody who understands that, which is why he's a very system guy. He gets his guys, he keeps his guys, he likes his guys. I think he's looking for, I think throughout the whole season, since it's been the most unenjoyable experience of his entire life. And he does, you know, he said, it's my guys, it's not the program. It's my guys. I'm sure he's been watching other guys throughout the season and picking the guys that he's really wanted. So whenever any of those guys come in the portal, I'm sure that's going to be his first priority. And, you know, I think we probably get, you know, one or two big names, and then we get a lot of very solid role player guys slash Rick Pitino mindset guys, which is what we're really looking for in the portal.
Yeah, right. You need people who are going to buy into his system, because Rick Pitino's system is a system that if you don't buy into it, doesn't work. So you want people to buy into it, and if you can get guys who do it, that, you know, is great. I do think you are right, though, Craig. You got to keep some core. You can't turn over your roster every year. It just doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's just not a recipe for success. You got to keep a core of guys. Now, listen, I don't really get why RJ Lewis would want to leave. He's seemingly, as we move into the next year, he's going to be the predominant player, right? Him and Wilcher, I would say, are probably going to be the top two guys or the two faces of St. John's basketball. So I don't see why he would leave. Obviously, in a world of NIL, there's always money. But, you know, that one's a little strange to me. But if you can keep those five guys, I think we put ourselves in a very, very good place going into next year. If like Nick said, we get one or two big splashes. You know, I do think we need, you know, I think you need one or two big splashes just because you need to show as a coach that you understand and you can work the transfer portal for basically to show that you're up with the times. Which I know kind of sounds silly, but at the end of the day, if you're able to do that, it puts you in a place with the younger guys, so that way when you're recruiting freshmen, you know, the parents, the AAU coaches will look and they'll go, oh no, this guy, yeah, Rick Pitino's old, but he's not out of it. He knows what he's doing. He understands the system, and he's got a plan in place that makes this team a viable place to go.
Yeah, I think there's lots of good players, and they move around, and guys get under recruited and under scouted. Sure. I mean, look at Dennis Jenkins. I mean, he could have played in any conference in the country. He'd have been one of the best guards. He is, you know, he really is one of the best guards in the country. So you got to find those guys too that are playing at lower levels and bring them up to where they belong. You know, and the guys that don't get minutes, you find them. And I think we get those big transfers that will help. Like I said, but I think you need the core. I think Glenn Taylor and RJ, if the other three are committed already, I think being sure those guys stick around is a big deal.
No, yeah, I agree. We got to keep our guys. Especially, I like our core of guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a team you can really build around, right? Wilcher, Zuby, Glenn Taylor on defense, RJ Lewis. Those are guys that could really tons of potential. They played great minutes for us, right? Now, listen, if Dunlap gets his shot back, bang, we got a deadly 3-point shooter. All of a sudden, we got the makings of a roster that's very scary for people.
There's really got to be something in the water in St. John's that, like, we just...
It is.
If you're a really, really, really good spot of shooting...
It's got to be the dredge from LaGuardia. That's the only explanation I have. Like,
it's between LaGuardia and JFK.
The runoff of the jet fuel causes something to happen in the air that makes it harder to shoot three-pointers, and from there, you just lose it for the rest of the season. I don't know. I that's the only explanation I can come up with. But anyway. All right. Well, unfortunately, that's it. The end of the 2023-24 St. John's basketball season. It was good. It was fun. It didn't end the way we wanted to.
A roller coaster.
But I think there's brighter days in our future. So
agreed. I think we're going up. We're on the upswing. So I think good things to come.
The good old Jamaican roller coaster ride, baby.
Jamaican?
Jamaica Queen.
Oh, Jamaica Queen.
I was like, I know you're Jamaican. I knew you were playing off Lilo and Stitch. I thought you forgot it was Hawaiian. But, okay, I'll take it. Jamaican roller coaster ride. All right. Well, that'll do it. For Craig, Tim, and Nick, I'm Vincent. Go Johnnies. Keep chasing.